Welcome back to episode 14 of the Amateur Theatre Podcast. Today we're speaking to Ian Jackson, who has been performing in the amateur scene for many, many years. He's a really interesting guy, and he has a load of very interesting ideas and insights into making the best of being an amateur actor. He's quite an acclaimed photographer with his twin brother. He also is a head teacher and runs numerous workout sessions at his local gym. So he has a very full and varied life and takes on a number of different projects all of the time, which I think is a real inspiration for any amateur actor listening. It just proves that you can do a number of things and not get bogged down in work. You know, there is a way of finding time to take on new projects and enrich your life with the joy of acting, I guess.
So the reason that I love making artwork really is because when I'm an identical twin, when we were growing up, we had this like joint identity, you know, all the way through school, it was the twins. So the idea really that when we started to make artwork was that we were going to try and forge as many different identities for ourselves as we could. And so it didn't matter if I put a wig on or, you know, my brother dressed up in a suit, whatever it was, like we would still genetically be the same. It was just the idea of, like, you know, people that have had, obviously not the same face, but people would say, you know, you look the same, you think the same, you speak the same. We knew we didn't, but that was the general sort of view of us. So we said that when we were making our own work, when we finished university and you literally had the freedom to do what you like, we were literally going to just create as many different identities, as many different portraits, as many different characters, if you like, as we could, but all linked to being a twin. So it doesn't matter how many you create, ultimately the source of the problem is still
there. You can't escape
that. I, in a weird way, kind of the getting into acting was like that. I mean, when I started, the first bit of acting I properly did was at Oxford Castle when
really?
We were doing the guy.
You know anything at school before?
Nothing. Yeah, we'd be involved in shows, but I would do the sound effects or the artwork or the props and things like that. So I remember going for the interview at Oxford Castle and literally crapping my pants. Don't put that in the podcast. But when they asked me in the interview to just do a little improvised scene, I really enjoyed it. I had the best time. I mean,
why did you do it? if you were doing sound effects and artwork for shows, clearly I know you and I know your artistic slant, mm-mm. but that artistic desire can find many avenues.
Absolutely.
To go, you know, to present itself. So if you were already doing artwork, and I presume you're doing photography as well.
Yeah.
So why would you?
I don't really know, actually. I don't know what it... I mean, I love history, and if it's linked to art and history and culture and heritage, I think I really valued it even more. And this is really vague, and I'm sorry, it's not very precise, but it was just... I don't know. There's something about a museum and an art gallery and a tourist attraction linked to history that I just think... they're so important, we can't lose them.
Right.
Like, it literally builds the character of the country.
Yeah. But you could have worked on the till.
I could have worked at the till, but there was just so much. I don't know. I think I realised there was a lot of latent stardom that needed to perform.
Okay, there we go. We're there. We have reached.
That's what it all comes down to.
You wanted to be loved.
I needed the admiration. When I did the interview, I honestly didn't really know how I was going to cope with it. And I think if it went well, then brilliant. And if it didn't, then okay, well, I'll go and work on the till instead. And I did it. And I remember, you know, like when you're so nervous, your heart pounds through your chest and you can't breathe and you almost like look down on yourself from above or whatever. And it felt like that doing the interview. And then when it had finished and I was walking home and you walk home, you think, well, what on earth was I doing? And then when I got the phone call to say, yeah, we'd like you to start next week or whatever, it was just like, oh, brilliant. Maybe I can do this then. So I was trained by a very lovely lady named Tracy, and just really loved it. I loved getting into a character, being someone else. It was really weird as well that I found that, again, jumping around in my chronology a bit, but when I was at school, the reason I did the sound effects and things is because I used to get quite crippled with nerves.
Okay.
And I think it was because being an identical twin, it meant people would notice you, like, you know, you stood out from different people purely because you look the same as someone else. So if...
Oh, you're saying the two of you stood out, yeah, and were noticed,
yes,
because you're...
exactly. Okay. Both of us stood out because we look the same as each other. So, like, I remember sitting in the hall at secondary school. Primary school was lovely. You know, primary schools are all lovely. And then when you get to secondary school, you're sitting in a hall with like 300 other people, and you can see people turn around going, oh, they look the same, they look the same. So you kind of get this unwanted attention, and it kind of crippled us a little bit with nerves and like during our teenage years.
Was there no desire from your parents to split you up? When I say split you up, I don't mean like forcibly.
Yeah, but like, I mean, send one to Africa.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The one to the North Pole and see if they meet. They've got a medallion. They can join together when they're 26. No, I think my mum and dad were great because they just sort of said, you know, find your own. It was sort of find your own way. We, in primary school, we were split up. We were in different classes.
Right.
In secondary school, we were as well. But we were always going to be in the same year group. We'd meet up at break and lunches. So it's a little bit like the identity thing. It's like you can be in different rooms, different groups, but ultimately you're always going to come back together at some point. And yeah, so there wasn't that desire really to separate us. But anyway, so I think the idea was like of being crippled with nerves because of always being looked at was something I thought, I wonder if I can get over this. And as I was walking away from the interview at the castle, I thought, no, I haven't. I felt terrified. It was terrible. But then when I got the call back and did the training, it was brilliant. So, you know, you get in, the only costume that fit me was from a mannequin of a child. And that's fine. It was great because when I was doing the tours, I thought if everything went horribly wrong and stuff, you could blame D100. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
It was almost like the protection of that character you were pretending to be. And
I can see that. How did you then make that decision to go, well, I can step into let's do a bit of acting, shall we? Let's see how.
I don't know.
Because I don't remember, because obviously, again, for the people listening, we have a long history of working together.
Yeah.
But I don't think I coerced you into doing it, did I?
No.
It wasn't expressly me saying...
No, I think you put the feelers out and said, how would you feel about it? And for me, I don't know, I'm somebody that always likes a challenge as well. I think we were saying earlier, you know, I like being busy and I like doing things. And I think really the idea of acting in a play on the stage where people, you know, lots more people, you know, on a tour it was like 12 or whatever, but for a play you're hoping it will be a lot more. And I think, you know, when I was kind of weighing it up in my mind, I think I thought this is almost like the next stage of the challenge. And I think that's what made me do it. And I think the role that I was offered was as Saturninus in Titus Andronicus, and still to this day is one of my favourite roles, just playing a petulant, bratty, baddie. It's almost like the part of myself I've denied for so long or hidden because it's not socially acceptable. So it's like being on stage, and again, I was just shouting and being stroppy, and I was like, if everyone hates me, that's good, they're supposed to, and it's Saturninus, not me. And I don't know, I loved it. I think if I was going in as maybe a softer character, it would have felt more nerve-wracking in a way.
Right.
I think because it was quite an extreme character, you know, someone that was, you know, like I say, someone that I would like to be, or not like to, I wouldn't like to be a Roman dictator, but because it's sort of like a part of you that you're almost like, this is not something I get to express every day.
Yeah.
Because it felt so different to who I am normally and how I would act normally, it felt really exciting. So I think that was what coerced me into it.
And I'm going to challenge that a little bit because I don't think you would have known that explicitly.
No.
You would have got a gist of maybe the character, but you wouldn't have known. So there must have been something else that was like just driving that. And it could, as you say, you may have already answered that question in that it could have just been the next step in the challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea that a bigger stage, more people, no, I harder think it, task.
But I feel like we were saying about, you know, why would you rather do the guided tours than work in the shop? And I think it was almost like I liked the fact I was performing for people. Yeah. And I think, you know, like I said, the character itself was attractive. It was something that I'd like to do. But knowing that you were going to be explicitly performing now, like, you know, there's, when you're on stage, you can't say I'm a tour guide, you are an actor, you know, even if it's amateur theatre, you are an actor. And I think that for me was exciting. It was something that I can say, yeah, I've dabbled in acting, yeah. And I've either loved it and hate, and again, the nerves that I was talking about from growing up, they kicked in. It was a good job I was in a toga where you couldn't see shaking legs
and sweat,
yeah, or smell me or anything like that. But it was, I remember having a moment in the rehearsals. We were about, do you remember, I was about 2 months away from performing, and I think I almost had like, What on earth am I doing? I've bitten off more than I can chew. And it was a good job I had the lovely Vicky Coleman there, because she sort of took me away and coached me through learning the script and, you know, kind of really getting into it. And I just thought, I don't know, it was nice. I think that moment as well for me made me realise that when you are in a play, you are a part of a bit of a community. You look after each other and you help each other through. And that for me was a turning point, really, because it made me want to really be involved in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just standing up and having fun. It was actually, you know, doing something for yourself, but also for the other people there, and being a part of a project. And, you know, we would always, you know, have a nice drink afterwards, or you'd sort of talk about what went well, I missed that line or whatever. And, you know, no one had noticed. So you'd always have these nice sort of reassuring conversations. And, for the whole lead up to the show and during the show, you rely so heavily on those people, and they really do become like your closest friends for a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
And if I was to see someone that I've been in a play with again, you've instantly got a connection and a chemistry. And I think I didn't know any of that before I went into Titus Andronicus, but I really loved it when going through that process. Well, so
I guess that answers my next question, which is why, if the challenge was set to perform on the stage, a bigger audience and whatever, you know, the justifications that you gave, what then, once you'd done it, what made you do it again? Is a kind of, and you may have just answered it. I think you may have just answered it with the...
No, I think definitely that sense of belonging to a group, I think, really helps. Like, I mean, that, to be honest, I didn't realise it was going to be quite as bonding as it was. I mean,
it's a weird thing, right?
It really is, yeah, because those people that are rehearsing with you, and, you know, they know the panic of trying to learn the lines and act at the same time, and you start to think about not only your relationship with the cast, but then your character's relationship with the other characters in the play. And it becomes this whole sort of really close-knit thing. I loved it. I love the buzz that you get from performing. Like, I know it sounds rubbish, but the adrenaline you get from it, the fact that I felt like I'd was achieving something personally, like, you know, I was thinking, I didn't know if I could do it, and I could, and I want to do it again. It's almost a bit like drugs, isn't it? It's like, it felt really good. I want to do more. So.
Yeah. In terms of like the process itself, have you noticed the development of your like abilities throughout the plays, in terms of, because you mentioned that range thing and whatever, how much have you noticed kind of like the decisions you're making and the approach you're taking to character changing, or have you just allowed it to run free and you've just kind of each new project you've just come at it and seen what happened? Has there been like a...
I think there's a bit of both. Think when I started, it was very much about like, who is this character like in a show that I've seen that I really enjoyed?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay,
and
cool.
I think, so that would almost be like my first reference point. And I felt, to be honest, and to this day, there is an element of, am I just a copycat sort of deep
steal
within
from
me?
The best,
and,
baby, steal from the best.
Absolutely.
Is
life is appropriation, isn't it? But I don't know, that for me, there was a long time there was that. But then when we were doing Macbeth, and I so I played Banquo, and I think as in a way he was almost that kind of like, you know, the serious knight like role, a good character, a nice character. But now I'm like, oh, I only like the baddies and the ladies and yeah, things. Had, so who am I gonna tap into? Yeah, to be fair,
you had extremities, didn't you? Because you, not that you did, but you can, if you're playing a baddie, you can play, you can ham it up, you can be, you know, you can
absolutely
fixate on one characteristic and really make it
the
presiding thought that the audience take home with them.
Yes.
And if you're doing Miranda in drag, there's a comic element to that, but also and the way we presented The Tempest was kind of, it was meant to be a kind of an upside down topsy turvy kind of world that we were presenting, so that fed nicely into you playing that role. As you say, when you hit Banquo,
it's almost like I've got to play it straight. What am I gonna do? So, and that was when I start to think, am I actually an actor? What am I gonna do with this? So, and I think that was the first time I kind of noticed myself sort of thinking, okay, if this was me, what would I have to do? And I think, I don't know, because I'm not, you know, formally trained, I suppose, as an actor, I've kind of fallen into it and absolutely love it. I haven't really got anything that I can kind of tap into. So I think a lot of it was talking to people that had been, you know, other members of the cast, other people that I'd been in plays with that, you know, weren't necessarily in Macbeth with me at the time, and just sort of thinking, how do I do this? How do I pull something out? And I don't know. To this day, I think it kind of goes back to the idea of taking lots of different self-portraits. It's like, if I was going to be this character, if I was going to look at them, how would I generate that? And I don't know. It's hard to put my finger on what happened. But I mean, just that process itself, I think, shows that as a person, I've kind of developed techniques, I suppose, of how do I create a character into a character.
I'm going to now attempt to
drag it out of you. Thank you, please do. I'm not even sure I answered your question.
No, you did. I mean, no, I think you did, because what we've reached from what you've just said is there's a clear line potentially at which, and we haven't talked about the subsequent plays after Macbeth, which you may kind of counter what I'm about to say, but it feels like first one was kind of like, let's get in there, let's do this. This is fun. I'm, you know, it's the next thing. Second one was like, okay, I know what doing a play is. I'm in the mix of it. I know how the process works and what's going on. But I'm also really excited to be taking on this fresh challenge of being such a kind of different type of role.
Yeah.
And then you hit Macbeth and it was like, okay, shit, I've got to act. So we've got this, it feels like a line between, you know, those two at the start, feeding from Macbeth and onto the stuff we've done afterwards. And I guess in order to try and dissect it with you, I would ask you, what the first two plays that you were doing, what was your approach in rehearsals? So how did you enter the space, and what was the kind of, as you came into the room, what were you doing? Were you just listening to me, or were you just watching what was going on, or how? Because obviously, especially the first one, but those first two, you know.
Yeah, they were very different. In all honesty, with the first play, Titus, it was literally, let's suck it and see. It was like, survive. But remember...
Each, as the rehearsals progressed, because we had quite a big cast, and it's quite a diverse cast in ages, and the dynamic between who had acted before, who hadn't acted before, stuff like that, how, from what you remember in the rehearsals, what was your kind of approach, and what was your feeling in the space? Were you just learning your lines, coming in and reading them and hoping you'd slowly find a character as you went? Or were you like watching and waiting to see how others found their feet and then followed suit? Or what was kind of like
I think it was the former, really. I think it was sort of like, I hope something good comes out of this. Like, learn the line. For me, that was a big challenge, is learning the line with... Going back to Oxford Castle, you can make it up a little bit and you can improvise.
Yeah, you had a framework and then you
had a framework, and then you know, if you said one bit before you said the other, that was fine, as long as you gave all of that information. Where with this, it was certain lines, and for me, that was the challenge. It was, you know, a big bit of dialogue for the first character. You know, halfway through, there was a quite a large monologue, and it was that was where the breakdown happened, where I needed coaching. So it's like, I can't remember all of this. And then that, I think that was when I kind of thought, okay, learn the lines, try and act around learning those lines, so like pushing it out. But then there is elements of seeing how other people are doing it as well and thinking, okay, well, that, you know, the energy that they're putting into the line delivery, that I need to replicate that. I don't want to look like the damp squid while everyone else is looking amazing. So I think it's there was definitely elements of that and trying to kind of keep up with the other people.
And were you just, again, I know it's a while ago, but were you just looking for like emotional triggers? Were you looking for like angry, right? I will use anger here. Sad.
And yeah, absolutely. But yeah, and to begin with, definitely that. But then you start to think about, okay, well, if I was starting to think, when have I felt this annoyed? When have I felt this angry things? And, you know, what did I do? And then if that's what I did, how would this character that I'm trying to form, how might he react to that as well? You know, he'd probably be even more angry than I would, because I tried to be a nice person, but, you know, my character certainly wasn't. And a lot of the way he was acting was through spite. And it was almost like, I don't know, it was almost like I said a minute ago, like it was the part of you that you try and deny for so long. And I think it was kind of taking them out and thinking, well, I wouldn't naturally like go over and slap someone around the face, but he actually might, because it's like the opposite of what he's doing. And actually they're getting physical in that other scene. So let me try and get in on this a little bit. I don't know. I remember that one, it was really piece by piece that it was, the character really started to form. And I don't think it was up until, even like in the dress rehearsal, I remember like a week before going on thinking, okay, I think I'm just about getting there with forming this, you know, a bit like Joffrey from Game of Thrones, a little bit like, you know, somebody from another TV show. I saw this really good play once on stage, I want to kind of bring, or, you know, even a little bit like a panto villain. Like that, there were little bits that you would try and, it's almost like sticky plaster it together to form this character. And I think for me, it's getting the costume on. That's when it really happens, because then it almost gives you that freedom to really be somebody else and let loose. And that, for me, that again, that was another moment where I just thought, this is, you know, A, it's fun, but B, I really can be somebody else. And all of these little bits that have been going through my mind, or I've picked up from other characters, or, you know, I've tried to think back to how I would have felt when I was that upset or annoyed or whatever it might be. The minute you've got that, the minute I've got that costume on, it just suddenly, I don't know, it amplified everything, and it suddenly made more sense to me there.
Yeah.
I think The Tempest was much more cerebral. I think going through that Titus Andronicus thing, when I went into that stage, I knew that I would pick up from the other actors that I was working with. I knew that I could learn lines. So that in a way, that fear kind of went the second
time. Yeah, it's weird how, and it sounds like, and again, from a director's point of view, obviously I'm aware of who's acted before, what in terms of their, what's their skill set, because and I don't mean specifically their talent, I just mean the knowledge of how to get stuff done, how you learn lines, how you work with another actor, or how you kind of fit in with the blocking, you know.
Yeah.
Someone who hasn't acted before may not have any idea of what this moment in the rehearsal process requires.
Yeah.
It does sound like you were doing a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
Like and whether that was because, as you say, you were pitted up against a set of people that were also doing a lot of thinking, and you were like, oh shit, that person's doing this. I better try.
Thinking
me. Literally, whatever it is. Yeah. I've got to begin, you know, and none of it was surface stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was a depth to it, which is probably quite different. I mean, and again, look, the whole point in this podcast is to start looking at those things
and
for people who are listening, especially the people who have not done a play before, to say like, okay, so I'm going in blind.
Yeah.
I can piece together a character without the drama school skills or without the experience of doing six plays before.
I think in a way almost that was the problem for me. Like, it was surface, definitely, for three quarters of the rehearsal. Like, it, you know, like I said, I kind of felt like I was pretending.
You're doing fake it till you make it sort of thing.
100% fake it till you make it. And I think it was when you realised, oh my God, I can't fake this anymore.
I might not make it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that fear of like, what am I going to do? I'm going to be looked at and they'll be like, oh my God, he's back on stage and oh, we can go to sleep now. Well, I didn't want that. And that's where, I don't know, it was almost like that fear kind of makes you dig in for something else. And, you know, because I was like mega naive in that first play. It was...
Well, you have no reference piece.
Yeah, absolutely nothing to refer to, nothing at all. And it was just, you know, like I said, the whole glamour of it and stuff was what made me want to do it. And then I think the reality hit in.
There's some hard work that you've got to put in to get there. Yeah, exactly. Which is really, I think it's really weird. Like, you can watch people, and I don't mean like you can watch a very good actor on TV or on stage and go, oh, how did they get there? You know, I could do that. And then you try it, you're like, oh, fuck no.
Yeah.
But even even at any level, you watch someone who is like done 6, 10, 20 plays.
Yeah.
There's a natural thing going on that you just don't get unless you go through the process. You can't.
1,000,000%. And I learned so much about myself in that. And I think that, you know, the reason that I've done so many plays after that is because I liked what I felt, if you see what I mean. Yeah. Like, it's almost like you, that kind of, like you said, fake it till you make it was 100% my strategy going into that first play. And then you start to use the stuff that you dig out from under that to help you with the next one. So going into The Tempest, I remember sitting down and thinking, I've worked with a couple of these people before. I know how good they are. So instantly it sets high expectations of yourself, but also what the play could be. I think the depth of the characters that I suddenly started to look for then wasn't just, I'm going to try and be like him off of TV or her from the theatre or whatever. It starts to be, that might be my first point of reference, but now I need to start really pulling out their motivations, their, you know, I felt like this at some point. So, you know, if I was stranded on a desert island with no one but my father and this horrible creature, how is that going? Do you know what I mean? And it's sort of like, I don't know. So you start to pull together all of these little bits. And I think, I don't know, again, not having any of that sort of formal training background meant that in a way it was almost like scrabbling around in an attic until you find something. Yeah. And that is my strategy for anything, to be honest. That's how I get through life. But it is also like, I don't know, when I go to a play, it doesn't feel quite like that anymore. It feels like...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's an unfair analogy on how you operate, because it does sound like maybe you were scrabbling in a dark attic in the first play and then... You know,
I didn't even have a torch at that point.
Well, I was going to say, no torch. You bump your head into a few things and you take them. You're like, oh, what's this? I'll keep that just in case I need it.
Yeah, yeah.
The second one, maybe there was a torch. And then obviously the third one, fourth one, maybe someone turned the light on and now you've got boxes in the attic that you're just opening.
Absolutely,
and going,
yeah.
Okay, what have I packed up here? I can't remember about that, but can I use this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That, look at this. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess on that second one then, maybe, again, it was a great show to do because it was a small cast and we did something weird with it and it was in the context of a weird scenario.
Yeah.
How did that feature in your kind of... Because if you were playing just a straight character, maybe you could have utilised a lot of the things you've just mentioned and just transposed them onto this next person and gone, okay.
Yeah.
You'd stepped into a world that was kind of the polar opposite to what you played first.
Yeah, exactly.
Time, so.
But it was weird in a way because I think I remember just feeling a bit more like myself.
Oh, okay, so you just...
In the second one, like I think it was almost like, because I went through so many different processes, I suppose, in that first play, I think the second one kind of just felt like... I know that I want to do something better than I did in the first one. I know I wanted it to be or feel a bit more authentic to a point. And I think, but there was a part of that that made me think, you know, I like doing drag and that the idea of there being that cross-dressing element, it was almost like that extravagant part of me, the flamboyance that I enjoy when I do a bit of drag could really come out and flourish at that stage. And it was comical, you know, there was definitely bits of comedy in that. I mean, I think in the opening scene as Miranda, when I put the dress and the wig on, I grabbed a lipstick from the audience and applied that and started asking them if it looked okay. So it was kind of like, in a way, drawing back to the Oxford Castle days where you could have a bit of an exchange with the audience, even, you know, even if it is mimed or silent because it's not written in Shakespeare. And I think, I don't know, because of that, because of those different elements, I think I felt a bit more relaxed in the role.
Right.
And I yeah. think that let me find those bits I was scrabbling for.
Yeah.
It let me find them a little bit easier in
a
way.
Yeah, so as the play was, we were quite, not loose, but we were... Yeah, as you say, there was a freedom to how we performed it. Didn't have to, the blocking didn't have to be, you will be here at this point on this night doing that. There was a freedom within the space because of the way we staged it.
Absolutely.
So I guess that's probably quite helpful.
Yeah.
If you, you know.
And I think the way we staged it as well, you know, we were in a costume, albeit skimpy white things. And then
God,
I was putting,
love you, Joseph, if you're listening.
Absolutely loved it. And the cod pieces are emblazoned in my mind every night. But no, and then I put a costume on top of that. So I think there was almost like that, I don't know, when I talked about almost like that protection of the character, there was almost like double that. I mean, there physically literally was double that. But I think in a way it almost made me think, you know, well, I'm playing this person that then plays another person, and it kind of, don't know, it's like Inception, isn't it? A dream within a dream. And it just kind of meant that I could relax into a little bit more as well. I don't know. I don't even know why. I just...
Was there a kind of a side tangent here? Was there stuff outside of this theatre world that you were creating for yourself going on that were tied into it? Because obviously, you know, drag is quite a specific thing to be taking part in.
Yeah.
Especially if you, what you said about your kind of, your school days and how you those nerves were in existence. Like,
yeah, it was 100% therapy, I think. Right. It was like, a bit like this podcast's turning out to be, I'm going to cry in a minute.
Handle tears.
Yeah. No, I think it was just, it was like sort of being able to play out the fantasy parts of your life that especially as a gay man as well, that you'd kind of denied for so long. I think, you know, growing up in our day, Michael, it was, you know, during school, high school.
I'm sure you're older than me, right?
No, we're both 287. But when we were at school, like, it was a different time. You couldn't talk about sexuality in the way that you can now. And, you know, I wasn't out properly as a gay man until university. That's how I personally, I felt to myself that I couldn't be that free for like 20 years of my life. Yeah. And I think doing the plays was an excuse to be able to put on a dress and apply lipstick and perform in front of people. And I think in a way that's another way, when I was saying it, I felt more like myself, I felt more relaxed. And it was almost like, I've kind of been wanting to do this for a long time. When I was at school, and like I've said before now, kind of like so nervous, I couldn't stand up in front of people or talk, or, you know, that would be a really big deal back then. Where now it was almost like I was exercising those sort of demons out, and I could really be myself and be free and enjoy that and enjoy kind of reveling in that part of myself. It was really nice.
Okay. So let's cross the line then that we've just created for you, that those first two attic moments of searching for stuff or whatever we're calling it. The attic years.
From? I love it. Yeah, the attic years. That's what you're going to call this podcast I wanted something so much more fabulous.
Hey, there might be more time. We might come up with something. What if we do kind of cross over that line then into Banquo and beyond? Mm-mm. What did you have to do to get Banquo right? Because again, sorry, I tend to do this, but yeah, Banquo might have been the first, or was the first kind of like, not proper, but you know the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Where it's almost like you've got to actually do some acting.
Yeah, you're going
to
be, you're on display as Ian the actor, not as Ian the first time actor who, no, you know, you can't be judged really.
Yeah.
And not Ian as drag comic.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a good, fun group of guys doing something weird. This is Ian, the actor on stage.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's bizarre because I think, first and foremost, you know, when I joined the cast of Macbeth, I was really happy to be doing another play. And I think what I wanted to do is almost a little bit of marinating in Banquo. It's almost like get to know the character and enjoy the character. And so it was a lot of reading the script and reading around the script for me that time. And okay. I think that was the, you know, we were talking about being a proper actor, like Ian the actor. I think it was the first time I think where I would sit down and actually really look at it and see what can I pick out. And it's not even what my character would say, it would be what other people said about him. And, you know, he had a son, so that kind of gives you a bit of inference as to what his character is like. And, you know, he was a celebrated general and things, so that must mean that there's a lot of loyalty. So I think in a way it was almost like really like sitting and trying to really understand the character, because there weren't the other things that I could draw on. I probably could have just scrabbled around and faked it till I made it again, but I wanted it to be more than that. And I think I moved away from that anyway as a person. So I think it was a more relaxed approach from The Tempest, kind of carried over, and I suppose a bit more self-belief as well that I could actually do it really helped. But for me, it was a lot more sitting down and reading. And I remember like the first time I did, I was doing a lot of drawings, not only because I was doing the artwork for it, which you will hear about in another podcast, but we were coming up with costume concepts as well. And I think that kind of gave me the chance to think I can actually build this character, and I can really flesh him out, and I can make him, you know, a little bit torn around the edges. And where would he have a scar? How would he have got that scar? And I suppose in a way the only reference point really was the script and was my own self. So I think it kind of, don't know, but if it was the attic years, I'd lock myself in the ensuite and I grew him up from scratch. So it was all, do you know what I mean? It definitely felt different. And I think my bag of tricks really was different for that one as well. It wasn't the protection of the costumes or the sticky bandage approach that I'd done before. It was literally like really try and grow this and nurture it and turn it into something that I would enjoy performing.
How did you begin to kind of work with the other actors at this stage? Because it feels like I'm kind of going to take The Tempest out of it, because you couldn't not work with, was it four other people?
Yeah.
There was no way that we weren't all going to be a dynamic of team. Mm. What, in terms of this bigger, back to a bigger cast,
can you
remember back to like how those interactions were going as your character developed, as you say, especially if you were going that deep into the text and you were beginning to do what, from the interviews that I've done, a lot of actors are doing. They're looking at the text, they're trying to see who says what about them, relate it to what they feel about the character, and then what they believe the character feels about themselves. So you get this nuanced kind of multi-layered kind of character building up based on what the text is saying. But it is reliant on also the interactions. So when you get into rehearsals, you're then beginning to bounce those ideas off people and get stuff back.
Definitely. And I think what helped is the guy that was playing Macbeth, who I probably had the most interaction with. He, you know, a very well trained, experienced actor, and I think his approach to rehearsals was very considered, you know, very, really friendly. You know, we'd worked with him in Titus, and so I knew him quite well anyway. But when you entered the rehearsal space, it was almost like you entered it and it was 50% Ian, 50% Banquo, 50% Anthony, 50% Macbeth, in a way. Like each, so like my character was, the minute you walked through the door, it was almost like, okay, I'll say hello and do something explicit and ridiculous and drop a couple of innuendos, and then I'm business as usual. And then, like, so I remember, like, you know, me and Anthony would sit and we'd talk about, you'd almost talk in role in a way, like, we would be, you know, when we, one of our scenes, we'd be trudging along as if we'd just come out of battle, and, you know, we'd sit down and we'd talk about the people that we slayed, and we'd talk about how one of us had the other one's back. And so it's kind of like, I know it sounds a bit method for my liking, but it kind of like I don't know, for me, it really helped, because it makes the character something really tangible, and it makes Anthony Macbeth rather than just Anthony pretending to be Macbeth. And I think it kind of really, I don't know, it built up the, it built up the persona, I suppose. That was a really shit answer.
And no, I think it's a really good answer because it, it highlights to people that if you're, if you're trying to build a character, you can do a lot of work.
Mm-mm.
But if you, if you then sit and chat with someone about a mythical battle that you were in where you killed 20 people and you only survived because the person you were with was there, it's nothing to do with like the physical script or whatever.
Yeah.
You, it's, that's the next layer of creating A, a relationship, and B, a more rounded character, because you've got that in your head. You can't lose that.
Absolutely.
That comes, so actually, in terms of like shaping the world and shaping the interactions and the companionship of those two characters, those conversations are really important, even though they were jokey and whatever. So actually it's like, you know, someone listening should be considering those ideas, because you can't just come in, do your 2 hours of rehearsal and bugger off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of homework to do, but there's also a lot of work to do with your fellow actor that isn't in the text.
It's and it, I mean, for me, it's about bond building as well, and the trust that you have with that person when you're on stage with when me and Anthony were talking about Banquo and Macbeth, I think as a part of my Banquo character, I think I knew Macbeth's levels of insecurity as well. And being kind of loyal, you know, you knew very well that you would be fighting alongside him and supporting him, and you were never going to be his sidekick. You were kind of, you were 50-50. Banquo's probably a little bit more humble, so he never needed the Thane of Cawdor, the Thane of Glamis. He didn't need to be the king's favourite. But I think he knew, I think in definitely in our version, I think he knew where he stood in terms of Macbeth, and he knew Macbeth's weaknesses and stuff. And I think, I like the fact that we played that quite differently, but we built up those relationships.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
You then left Siege, which is...
I didn't leave Siege.
Joseph will know the pain of...
I didn't leave. I know I've never left Siege. And I just, this was like, you know, where it was like, you know, you'd have someone featuring Madonna on a show. So she hasn't left her own solo career. She was just helping.
No, I think you're framing it wrongly. I think it's like being part of Take That and then going off and joining Backstreet Boys, and Take That guy's going, what is he doing with the Backstreet Boys?
No, it wasn't. This is definitely more like Robbie and Kylie. This was, and I was Kylie the whole time. No, I think, so again, I mean, I did A Winter's Tale because I wanted to do it because I was working with someone that I knew. But the role I was cast in as well was almost like an equivalent role to Banquo. So I played Camillo, who was an advisor to a king, who was almost like the benevolent character, the loyal, you know, even when things go wrong and he gets sort of cast away and stuff, he was still faithful to his, to, you know, his master. And it was kind of nice. I think one of the reasons I wanted to do that as well is to see if I could almost replicate that acting process. So if Banquo was the first time I'd properly become an actor in my mind, I think, you know, I wanted to see if I could do it again, I think. I think I wanted to get a bit more confidence in my own abilities and check it wasn't a fluke and I wasn't just feeding off the skills of other people. I wanted to actually be in that character again. And so that was very much why I did that role. And,
And what was it? I think it's quite important in my mind to kind of just quickly dissect it, because what was it like as a, I mean, the security and comfort of Siege, no matter how you perceive it, we are at this, we have quite a tight knit group.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
So stepping away from that, or not stepping away, you know what I mean? Stepping outside of that little bubble and joining a cast. I know Kieran was there and you may well have known some others.
Yeah, I knew a few others from the, like the parties and things. So not in a professional sort of capacity, I suppose, just socially. So I think, definitely that tight-knit security thing was gone. I think what I really remember from the rehearsal process there is the a really diverse age range. And I think I became very aware of my age. And But I didn't feel as insecure as I possibly could because of doing the shows with Siege as well. So I think I kind of went in thinking, okay, I can probably stand my ground with, you know, or at least give it a go as much as anyone else. Yeah. And so I think in a way, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying about seeing if I could do it again and kind of give myself a bit more confidence, I think it definitely did that. And I think the cast helped me to do that a bit because of the diversity of the age range. I remember there were a couple of people in the cast that were older than me as well. So it was nice to still be able to pick things up from other people. Right. I'd done lots of other shows. So I think in a way it was... For me, it was good to do that collaboration just because I got to talk to a lot of people that I hadn't met before. It was good to see how I'd kind of cope with the younger and older cast range. And I think, just to kind of reaffirm the fact that I could act, that I could build a character from scratch in a way, because I hadn't seen The Winter's Tale anywhere on stage. I'd literally just read the book. There weren't film versions or anything that I'd seen that I could refer to. It was literally build this character and enjoy playing him, you know, sort of make him someone that I'd like to perform as. So
did you, up until this point, and I, again, this is, I have no explicit kind of memory of this being the case, but had you come across any kind of like stumbling blocks or failings that you had to overcome? Like it feels like, and you haven't portrayed it as being this easy process of, you know, just happened and I just got on with it and I just became a very good actor and that was it. You haven't sold it that way. You have highlighted a number of different things that you were having to go through, but just while we talk about you kind of stepping away from some security, even in the plays you've done with me, do you remember anything that kind of tripped you up that you had to kind of like a challenge that you were?
But every night with theatre, isn't it? Like that, you know, there'd be like things like, I mean, Titus wasn't an easy production to be involved in. I loved every minute, and I think probably because it was my first play, kind of gives you a lot of resilience. You know, I'm forgetting lines and learning how to improvise around that and how to not let it show and not fall down and cry if you miss a massive chunk. There's all of those little things that you kind of learn along the way. And because I've not had any training, not sure if I've mentioned that, but because I haven't, like I didn't really know how to cope with those things. So I think you just kind of, I mean, it was definitely learning on the job, but I think you do, I mean, it was good that I faked it till I made it on that first one, because it was almost like I missed a line. How do I cope? What do I do? And then it was always nice to have someone in the audience. You know, I've got incredibly supportive family and friends who literally fill out half the audience at least one night. But I think that's a lie. No, well,
it's not.
It's hyperbole, if nothing else.
What about like the and this could be just a straight no, but what about the learning of the theoretical stuff? Because a lot of what you talk about is kind of learning on the, as you just literally just said, learning on the job through experience. Either whether, you know, whether it's the baptisms of fire that was Titus, or whether it's the kind of the joy of working with people you've worked with before and playing off them, or as with Macbeth, it's kind of like having someone like Anthony who you know is a professional actor and has had the experience and helps you shape your character. What if anything were you doing to learn how to become an actor? And again, it may have been nothing. It's just interesting, you know, again, from those listening who are, I totally agree that experience is massive. Like doing stuff is massive, but there obviously is a lot of theatrical stuff out there in the world that either drama schools or training courses, or even just getting it off the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Possible. I think I would love to say that I've read some, but the God's honest truth is I just haven't.
Which is fine, which is actually probably good for someone listening.
It's on my list of things to do, is to read some of these great theoretical books and stuff, because I'm sure I would pick a lot up from it. But I think, I mean, I'm not going to lie, being dead honest, I am a busy, you know, I am quite, I like filling my time with things. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a teacher by day. I teach gym classes in the evenings or at weekends. I make artwork with my brother as much as I can. I enjoy spending time with my family and friends. And I think...
And theatre has a space. You have
and theatre,
a slot.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, if I was had more time, I guess, to dedicate to it, and I would be theorising out my ass, but I think in a way I'm lucky enough to have built up a trust and respect for the people that I've worked with often, yourself included, but a lot of the actors as well, like I've worked with previously, or you know, I've met through doing other shows or whatever. A lot of the theory I pick up from talking to them and working with them, and you know,
I've said it before, on not in this conversation but in others, that a lot of people who have never read any of this stuff are implementing it without actually knowing it.
Yeah,
they can't put a label on it or a name on it, but many of the elements that they're using to develop a character or portraying on stage have come from that background. And whether, again, through osmosis, watching someone else do something or interacting with someone, it's being picked up, it's still relevant practice.
Yeah,
it's still there. Those theoretical things still exist
in
their armory. Not in your defense, but in defense of people who haven't got the time or don't want to do it, it's actually a lot of the work of the director to make sure that if specific questions or ideas or practices need to be implemented, that they put them on the cast.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to now that you're in the mix of doing shows and you kind of got a rhythm and a pace to what you're doing.
Yeah.
What is it that you're looking for when you go into the room for a rehearsal to get the best out of you? And what are you looking for leading up to the shows and then during the shows for you to perform your best? And this is more, I mean, I'm thinking for a director listening.
Yeah, yeah.
Now Ian, the actor, what helps him get to where he needs to be?
I think instantly it's the people that I have the most scenes with. So it's in Shakespeare, there's always like these plots or subplots of bits, isn't there? So when I was cast as Mariah, I instantly looked at, okay, who's Feste, who's Sir Toby? Am I going to get on well with them? Do I have to try really hard to form a good friendship? Will it happen naturally? I mean, I've been lucky and it's all been quite natural with the plays I've been in. But I think instantly that's the first thing, because I think for me that will reduce the anxiety of rehearsing then, because you know that you can relax and enjoy their company. You know that you are going to have a good time. So I think that instantly when I'm cast, that's what I would look for, is am I going to have good chemistry with the people that I'm in the scenes with?
Right, okay.
I think then it's almost looking for me now, it's thinking, what can I do with the role? So I don't want it to just be the pantomime baddie or the pantomime dame. So even if, you know, like in Mariah, it could have quite easily just been, you know, this big sort of hammy panto dame sort of role. And I think initially when you go in, you kind of think, yeah, that's what it'll be like, but then more comes from it and you realize that, you know, you want to bring that depth and stuff that I'd learned from Macbeth into it. So I think I want to look that when I am cast, I want to see that there is room to build the character myself a little bit,
right?
If you see what I mean.
And what are you expecting as a process in terms of, well, what do you like from the director? I mean, do you want to, the first day you come in, do you want to be told the context of the play, exactly like the framework of it? Okay.
No, I like the freedom of doing it myself a little, not myself, but, you know, sort of like building it up. I mean, if I was to go into a space and say, this is how you perform it, these are your lines, I want you to be in this place when you say that, I would hate that, because I think you're fulfilling someone else's vision and you're so
you suddenly become
to the process.
Yeah, you become a tool rather than...
Absolutely. Yeah. And I want to be a part of it. I'm not just for decoration, darling. Yeah. I need more Sauvignon Blanc.
No, you don't.
No, but I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I understand. Yeah, yeah,
I like,
yeah.
I think it's like that room for like where I was talking about growing Banquo in the downstairs toilet or wherever it was. I like that. I like that room to be able to do it, I think.
So what is the director giving you then? Or what? And what
I
is?
I think it's guidance, isn't it? Like, okay. You know, they can't, they're the signpost. They're not the route map, if you see what I mean. Yeah, they tell you where you're going. You get there on your own. And right. I think that was quite nice.
That's nice, wasn't it?
Can you keep that in? Because yeah. I'll need to listen back to what I just said. That was dead good. Oh my God, I almost sounded wise. No, but I mean, it feels very much like that. Like I like... And then, you know, when you're a little way into the process and something really isn't working, that's when I like to be told, well, you know, I would rather it was more or less, or have you thought about doing it in this way? I think that for me is important. But I think being a part of the vision in the first place is massive. Like, right. I wouldn't want to do it if I wasn't, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to just be a prop picked up and put somewhere and used in this sort of way. Yeah. I want it to be much more fluid and organic, really. So
yeah, okay, that makes sense. With the framing of the show in your head and the lead up to that show, what do you need to have done, have in place to feel confident to step on stage for the first time? And I'm going to feed you an answer, but just to set you off. Like, I'm talking like, do you want to have done three runs of the show full, start to finish with all the cast? Do you need to have your props, you know, whatever? And again, let's both agree we're doing amateur theatre here. Mm-hmm. So you may not have your costume until the dress.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Cause I was going to say costume. Really. No, I think, I mean, it's different with each play, isn't it? Because I think it depends on your scenes and blah, blah, blah. But I think as long as I feel like I'm not just standing there like some clueless moron going, where should I be now? I think as long as I've got some idea of what's happened. So like when we did Much Ado About Nothing, I didn't have lots of scenes. I love playing Don John's, probably my joint favourite role that I've played. And I think I missed quite a lot of rehearsals, but I wasn't needed for as many of them because he doesn't have.
I mean,
you missed
a few as well.
Yes, but I was busy. All right, no, I didn't. I tend to.
Difficult to be a signpost when the guy's not.
Fuck off.
The car's not even driving on the fucking road
when someone's walking in a different country. No, it was fine. I was there for the ones I needed to be with. I was there way more than a lot of people.
You fucking were. You were there for the shows as well.
Exactly. No, but with that one, I'd say what I was saying before I was rudely interrupted is that I wasn't needed for a lot of them, so I didn't necessarily need to do, you know, sort of five solid run through start to finish. I think as long as I knew what I was doing within my scene and how that was going to fit with the overall picture, for me that was more important. Obviously the full runs are massive and that kind of it's the glue that holds it all together.
Yeah.
But as long as your pieces are decent, if you see what I mean, then the glue's the finishing touch. So That's how why am I talking in metaphor so much?
You got one off.
I know, and I'm looking for more now. I'm just trying to win points. But yeah, I felt confident that I could perform the show. I knew how my character felt. I knew his relationship with characters in scenes that I wasn't necessarily in or been to the rehearsals for, but I knew where it fit. So it felt fine. I didn't feel panicked or anything.
Yeah.
So
and then what about stuff like people forgetting lines, you forgetting lines, props not being there? I mean, just the general stuff that you might have to overcome. Are you conscious of that, or are you just dealing with it as and when?
I was very conscious of it in the beginning. Right. Very. Like, it would be a huge deal if I missed a line. And, you know, it's almost... I was like a second away from going, stop, we need to do this scene again. Like, but I think now you just kind of... You act your way around it. And... yeah, you've learned to do that, and you know now you can kind of let your character act around it, because by the amount of rehearsals and again having the protection of the costume and things, those little bits that I used to really worry about don't worry me. Actually, I don't even think about missing lines and stuff anymore. I think it's because you've got the confidence of improvising and
Especially if you trust your other actors.
Exactly, exactly that. And I think, you know, when you know the people, if I miss a line, I know that they would have the sense to think, well, I can pick it up here, or I could feed this bit in, which sounds slightly Shakespearean, so that I can pick it up again. I think, yeah, I mean, and that that has happened as well many a time. You know, you do a line which is very similar to another line, you know, and even when I was doing Don John, he's got a lot of lines that are very similar at one point in the play. And you said the wrong one and you're like, oh shit. But the actor that you're on stage with is skilled enough to be able to feed in almost like the right line and a modified version of the line so that you can jump straight back into it again. And, yeah. You know, I've done that for other actors as well. And I never thought I'd have the skill to be able to do that.
Just to round that off as a point for someone listening, are you looking at other people's lines and learning them, or again is it just picked up through rehearsals? Are you
prepared? Both. I think right. Both for me. Shall I tell you how I learn lines?
Yes.
Here's a little golden.
Hey, here we go.
So I can recite the word, this is a brag, to every Madonna song ever made because I listen to her so much. So when I had that little breakdown in Titus and I thought, how can I just learn my lines so well?
If you sing your lines, do you?
No, I do. I record myself saying them and listen to it. So like I'd listen to Madonna in the car, or, you know, if I was getting ready for work, or if, you know, you were brushing your teeth for a night out, whatever it is. So, and then instead I would then listen to me saying the lines.
Okay.
And it got to, so once I've learnt my lines, once I've done that, that bit's all gone in and I know the order and I know the pattern and stuff, I then re-record them with the feeder lines.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
And then I'll put on a voice for a line that feeds in, and then that's what I'd be listening out for.
Okay.
In rehearsals, or that's what I'd be listening out for when I'm going on to do like the dress run or whatever. And then it's so primitive. I told you, I'm like the most naive actor that you'll ever interview in this podcast. It's all made up. But I don't know, it just works for me. Like being able to listen to it and really remember it, but also like learn it that way and kind of learn other people's lines that way as well really helps. And yes. I think so. And so obviously to do that, I'm reading the lines because I then record myself reading other people's lines. Sometimes as well, you know, when I'm re-recording myself reading my lines, I will then say, walk to the door or drop to your knees. Or,
oh, really? That's good.
Yeah. So that's how I...
Okay. Help. Maybe just to round it all off then, if we go back to the nerves thing, do they exist anymore? Do you still get nervous before you go on stage? They do.
Yeah. And I get nervous in everything, like in plays and everything. But I think you need to. I think if you're not a little bit frightened, what's the point? And that is genuine. I do genuinely feel like that. You know, I love my job as a teacher, but you're terrified at 8:30 before they come into the room. Terrified might be a bit of a stretch. You're too tired to be terrified, but you definitely have like an adrenaline kick. Same with, you know, doing fitness classes. You always think, am I going to remember this routine? That is very similar to acting, by the way, teaching an exercise class.
Really?
I've worked out, yeah. Learning routines and lines and choreography and sort of performing in front of adults and if you go wrong, you kind of wing it. No one else knows. It's great. But no, you do. You learn a lot about yourself by being frightened and learning how you cope with fear. And I think it makes you a more rounded person. You become resilient. You become daring.
Well, if you're facing down a challenge and conquering it, then I guess it's
absolutely.
Kind of
I don't want to feel like I ever have to shy away from something again. I did all of that in my teenage years and I don't want to do that again. I want to be able to face things head on and know that somewhere deep down, even if I'm a little bit nervous about it, know that I've got the strength of character to be able to do that. So I think, yeah, the nerves are there, but they're good nerves. They're like a power source.